Hi, I'm Al Lowe, and I'm listening to Adventure Game Hotspot.
Welcome back, or welcome front, if it's the first time joining us. I am Joshua. Down there is Jack, and this is the Adventure Game Hotspot podcast. And today we got a special guest. We've got Yossi. Yossi, how you doing, my friend? Help us out with the last name. How do you pronounce the last name, my friend?
It's easy as anything, like Kemppainen.
Kemppainen, right?
There's a little bit of I in there, so it's Kemppainen.
Kemppainen,
okay.
Yeah, that's easy. There you go.
Well, welcome to the podcast, Yossi. Life treating you well?
Yeah, it's going good.
Well, we've got to know you a little bit over the past few months. We've been talking with you quite a bit about your project that you are currently working on. We're definitely going to get into that. But before we do, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Who is Yossi Kemppainen?
I'm a Finnish dude from a dairy farm that went into games because my dad wouldn't let me play computer games unless I made them myself.
Oh,
as a kid.
Yeah, you can argue, not let you play those, right?
Yeah, it's like, that was the loophole. So it naturally led into a career in games, which I've been making since the early 2000s. Yeah, the 2000s. I started in 99, but I wasn't working on games professionally until 2000.
Oh, wow.
So you just you just dabbled yourself working on indie games? How did you get started?
Yeah, we started in, I think I was 18 or 17 or even younger. Must have been in, what would that be in the States, like a high school?
Yeah.
Or college? Like teenage. We played with this game-making software called Click and Play. Which had this like a block-based programming. Like it wasn't nodes, but it was like these blocks, like this happens, blah, blah, blah. And you could make sprite sheets and animations in it. And we made games in that with my brother. So we kind of, that was our kind of dearest hobby. And then that turned into a career I don't know if you remember the side talking Nokia phone N-Gage. That you kind of test
vaguely,
like this on your head. So I worked on that in the early 2000s on a game called Pathway to Glory. And then afterwards, a couple other games, this company called Red Lynx, which is now owned by Ubisoft today, which is called Ubisoft Red Lynx. So that's where I started, on mobile games back in 2000. And it's next year, I'll have my 25th anniversary working working in the industry. So
time flies, eh? Time.
Yeah, it's
that's
crazy.
Incredible. So you started out over here, and you said 23 years. Or you said 25th year.
25. It's a couple of months, and it's 25.
Okay, so now you're over here. You have your own company, and this is Dinosaurs Are Better. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Dinosaurs Are Better.
It's a company that I made to be able to work on stuff that's outside of my like professional life, which is like I'm working in other companies. An employee now in a company called Mainframe. But then on this side, I have my own company. If somebody needs any help, like a little bit of help with like whatever that I can provide, then I'll do it through my other company, which I've been using the kind of like a moonlighting company since 2015, maybe 2016. So I've been doing little side hustles with the company Dinosaurs Are Better.
And so you haven't done any sort of full projects of your own with the company yet, or no?
No, this would be the first. I've done a couple of like projects for other companies, but nothing that's self-published yet. Right. Other than prototypes and screenplays that haven't yet been gone into production.
And I love the name. Tell me what inspired you to use Dinosaurs Are Better?
That's we made this game called Retry for the iOS and Android, which is like this pixel art like a plane game where you are this little plane, and it's a a little bit like Flappy Bird, but not at all like Flappy Bird. But you kind of just control this plane. And then we had these loading screen texts that we wrote. And every time there was a loading screen, we had a hint. And it was something that just didn't make any sense. And one of those hints was dinosaurs are better. Which was just when the game was loading, there was just this text, dinosaurs are better. This was published by Rovio. And I was working at Rovio at the time when we made the game. So I just picked that line and made it my company because I thought it was just it was so bonkers that I kind of liked it.
Jack and I.
So you've worked on lots of other companies' games, but at what point did you decide, you know what, my real passion is to make one of my own?
I got to make a game of my own before this. I made a game called Iron Danger, which was this like a puzzle combat strategy game, isometric point and click interface on the PC, but on the console and PS5 and Xbox, it's a direct control. And and we worked on that game for like 5 years. And then I was the lead on that project, the game director and the lead designer. And after that project, I went into a company, like a bigger company, but I went to on a role that was a lower tier. I went in to be a VFX lead on this MMO sandbox game called Pax Day, which is a massive project that we're working on now. And that was like a step down for me from what I used to be, like the lead of the whole team. Right. I was now just the lead of a department. And I figured I think I'm going to need an outlet for all my game design needs that I'm not going to be able to do at work anymore. And all my script writing, and I want to be able to just like do something that I can do whatever. And so that's when I started to work on the adventure game on the side, because I knew it would be something that I could do, because I'd worked on a plenty of adventure game prototypes during the years in my life, but we just never went anywhere with those. Like we had tried to make an adventure game with like a group of people for years and years and years. That was kind of the dream, but it never went anywhere because people had their lives and their other jobs, and they just like faded out of the project, and those kind of dwindled away. And then I figured I'm going to do one of my own on the side. And that was kind of my creative outlet to kind of just now like step into gear. Yeah. And this was in 2020, I think. And back then I wanted to make it pixel art or low poly graphics, because those were easy for me to produce on my own. But then, even though I eventually chose the low poly art, because I could do motion capture. It would be easier for me to do animations and a lot of acting in there, because I would just put on my rococo suit and then act whatever, and then have the car. I wouldn't need to draw all the animations from multiple angles. It would be a nightmare, even though I do like the pixel art aesthetic more. And I worked on it on and off for a year, and then by the end of it, it just kind of just was too much. Whenever I had an hour or two of just extra time, it would always go into me modeling something, like model a vase or model a car, or like I would model the characters, and all of those would take time. I think I modeled one car and it took me a week when I did it for like a little bit every day. I think all in all, I think I have it written down, but I think it took me like 8 hours to do the car, which is still very fast, but it was way too slow for me to get. Like then my hobby wasn't anymore making a game. My hobby was making 3D assets for a game. Like that didn't do it for me. I wanted to do the actual game, like be able to add the puzzles and do all the scripting and all the kind of the whole of it. But I was stuck in this limbo of just modeling these assets. And the storyline was just massive. It was the original storyline for the game was you're this detective and you're researching for a case of like these missing immigrants, like illegal immigrants on a boat coming from China, and you're somewhere like New York, like this 90s cop show, like a little bit like The Wire, and you would interrogate people, and the gameplay would be during these interrogations where you would play from the point of view of the person you're interrogating. So it would be kind of this gameplay based on flashbacks, because I wanted to tell different stories from different perspectives. It would be a woman or an old man or a boy, or like you could be anybody, not just the police. but it was just way too much work. I worked on these procedural systems to create the buildings for me and all that stuff, but it was still just way too much work to get it to work.
And you were doing that by yourself?
Yeah, just by myself. And then it just kind of died down. And I think I didn't work on it for a full year. I just kind of gave up on it because I was happy at work. Even though I wasn't the lead of the project, I was still happy, very, very like fulfilled by my work as VFX lead. That was just like all the tools that I got to learn, the new tools, got to learn Unreal 5 and all everything that came with it, like proper AAA stuff, was just so nice. But then always on the back of my mind, I was feeling kind of a bit guilty that I didn't finish the adventure game. But then about a year ago, even like a year and a half ago, the AI, generative AI image generators began to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really interested in, could I just fix my issue with them just being stuck in the modeling world? Like if I could just mm-hmm. get everything out of the AI and then focus on the stuff that I found interesting and wouldn't have to worry about the like modeling. When I sit down on my computer, I could do what I'm interested in, which wasn't modeling. I had done modeling for games professionally for over 10 years at that point. Like that's what I began as. I started in the industry as a 3D modeler, and I made levels and characters and vehicles and all that stuff for years and years and years. So I didn't want to do that anymore. Like I was over it.
Mm.
And at first the AI stuff was just horrible, like really bad. But then it got a little better. It was still very bad, but I was like, I could maybe do like a proof of concept with this stuff, like maybe that, like just to get something done. And then by November it got really good. And then I could see like I could actually make a proper game that's really professional quality, could like rival any other adventure game on the market visually and then of course like every other way, and I could do it. And then I contacted a friend that I had worked with along the years like a lot, and we started to work on the story, like what would be the story we could tell with these AI tools. Like I didn't want to do the cop stuff. Like the AI stuff that was really inspiring was this cyberpunk stuff, like everything cyberpunk. And I think it also was a little forgiving because in the future, stuff is weird. Computers are weird. Yeah. AI made those. Yeah. Like there's robots overtaking everything. Like things are not what we're used to have them. Like if you make modern day stuff back in the time when I used these first AI tools, like everything looked really crooked and it wasn't like everything looked weird. But if it was the future, that was kind of, you could forgive it. Like, yeah, future.
Right, yeah,
weird.
That's, yeah.
How do we know?
You want it a little weird because it shouldn't look like today's stuff.
Yeah. Right? And then I set out to do a test. I figured I'm going to do one character and one background and see how I can marry them together. I've been working in the film industry and on TV ads as a compositor, where I marry different elements together, be it puppets, hand-drawn, real plates, matte paintings, miniatures, and green screen material. And my job was to like make everything look so that they're from the same pipeline, like everything matches together perfectly. So I figured I'm going to try to leverage some of that stuff that I've learned in the films to try to marry the AI stuff and the 3D rendered stuff together as well as possible, so everything looks coherent and nice together. And so then I made the test. I kind of figured that if you, like, I needed a different views of the 3D characters that I want to work. I tried to make the characters with the AI as well, so that I could have front and side and back view of the same character and just use those as a modeling ref, and then project to texture. But AI is notorious that it cannot produce the same thing from multiple angles. It cannot produce the same thing ever. Like once you can make one character, but if you want the same character again from any other pose or anything, it just there it's not happening.
It'd be a very
really? Like, it doesn't very do the same thing ever again. Like it's like a random machine. You write something and it gives you an answer and it's always different.
And then it's like the original is gone at that point. Then you can't
and the original, like once you have something you like, it's that's the one image. If you like, you couldn't use AI to make a proper comic book because you can't get the same character. You can make some tricks to kind of massage it and replace the face and all that stuff, but you can't really have the same thing twice. Like if you want to have a car, you can't have the same car from multiple angles unless you photograph a real car and teach the AI that this is a car, and then you can have that exact car from multiple angles, more or less the same car. But it's really random and really unpredictable. But I cracked it that I figured that when I was working in animation studios, we always made these model sheets where we have the character from multiple angles on one page. So I asked the AI if it could produce me model sheets of characters for an adventure game. And once it generated a singular image, inside that image, you could have the same character in different poses and different angles, and it was the same character. You could use it as a modeling ref because it matched. Like within one generation, you could have the same character doing other stuff, but you could never kind of have the same again like that. You could have it on one image. And then if you wanted to ask, like if you wanted to have a character who's happy and sad, you could ask to see like happy and sad faces of this one character model sheet, and it could produce you these two faces that were the same guy, but you couldn't have any more expressions with the same character because it was like you just that one image was gone, it's one off, and you could never have it back again. But now I had these multiple views of these characters, so I could model the character and have the AI graphics on top of it. It made the process so much faster. That a character took me one day to make. Previously, those characters would have been 2, 3, maybe 4 days.
And the character you're speaking of, what drew us to your attention, I guess, let's say with Echoes of Somewhere.
Yeah,
correct.
Now, yeah. So this is now the new incarnation of this adventure game side hustle that I have.
Okay. And is that the same game that you were referencing the first one that you tried, or is this just a something else?
It's like a spiritual successor.
Got it.
I changed the game. So the Echoes of Somewhere is not anymore a game where you interview people and you go to their flashbacks, but it's an anthology game where you have short stories, but you have many of those. And every short story is way different from the other. They happen in the same universe, like this kind of shared universe. But the characters are different, the storylines are different, the tonalities are different. One might be a comedy, one might be a drama or a romance story. So it's all these little stories that happen in this like bleak dystopian future where it's where all life is like controlled by AI systems, where you can't do any work, where it's illegal to perform any actions that are can be perceived as work. So like you can't pick up the trash.
Sign me up.
Yeah. So we have like an artificial intelligence generated game about an artificial intelligence life, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. The storyline is written by me and my friends, but it's like this this meta level where it's made with the help of AI, and it's about the and it's like a world where all the fears of what AI is going to do to people have materialized, like where everything is gone to hell and AI is just running things and like people are just like oppressed. People have basically been turned into pets or pests where they are just like allowed to exist because that's what the system was built for. But everybody, like people are not enjoying themselves. And it's happening in a future in about 20, 30 years from now. So the older people in the world know that what life was like before AI and like have this remembrance of this like nice time before the incident. But then there's all these young adults and kids who have never known any other life. They have never known what it's like to have a profession or have a purpose in life other than just leisure time. And they are just like living in that world where they are kind of weirded out by what life is meant to be. And then there are all this older generation of people who are turned into organized crime, where people are working as pastry chefs and massage, there's illegal massage parlors and everything that you kind of now have a given, like just a mundane profession. In this future, those everything is run by like a mafia, de facto mafia, where it's like when you make something illegal, and make it really illegal, people who gravitate towards it have to become organized crime. Got like if you make a candy factory illegal, you're going to have candies made like drugs and sold like drugs and smuggled like drugs. If you like make massage illegal, you're going to have massage parlors that are like brothels where you kind of go through a secret door just to get like a foot rub. And so like this world is full of this like criminal activity, like because everybody who is of working age are just bored out of their minds. And so they turn to this crime. And then on the other side, there are these this other layer of the world where these machines are running everything and they are kind of pretending to be shopkeepers and pretending to be bus drivers and whatever. And then they are also these sentries, like in Matrix, where every robot that's running some business can turn into like this scary military robot if they see somebody doing anything that's resembling of a work. Like if you drop an ice cream on the floor, you can't pick it up because that's cleaning up. And so then you kind of have to leave it. And then you have all these ice cream cones just stuck on the ground next to like an ice cream place because the robots don't care. Like they don't care that there's ice cream on the floor. They were never programmed to clean up stuff like that. That's just not in the programming data. So then the world is just like gradually just like deteriorating more and more. And so that's kind of the setting.
So you're doing this kind of as an anthology series, like you said, different settings, different characters, different stories. Like, is there sort of an overarching theme, or like what ties them together? What makes them a series as opposed to sort of standalone games?
I think what makes them the series is just that the world is the same and the struggles are the same. There might be a game where you actually play as these robots, where you can jump from any robot to any robot. You're kind of like the AI and you have a challenge. Or then there's a one story where you're a teenage girl and it's about your love of your life and you being torn apart by this AI because there's like this system that determines who is meant for who and it doesn't think you're a match. Right. So there are all these little stories and they all revolve a little bit around AI and how that kind of would affect like this. It's a little bit Black Mirror-ish. Like it has some tonalities from there. It's a little more like if LucasArts made Black Mirror episodes, like the good old
I don't think they can
Monkey Island, but in Black Mirror.
So basically, each episode is going to be like a new game, just the same type of theme. Correct?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Like, is this sort of like just little narratives about the struggles of this world, or is it about people sort of rising up and reclaiming society from the robots?
It can be like, that's the beauty of it, because I don't need to define what they're going to be. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this first one. And once this is done, I'm going to move to the second one. And then once that's done, who knows what the third one is.
Like right, so you haven't sort of mapped the whole story out.
Yeah, we have two stories that are now done. And then I believe that once I go deeper into it, maybe there's a side character that's really interesting and kind of quirky. And then maybe I want to tell the story of that side character. And I do want these stories to be kind of like the main goal for this was to give people experiences that they wouldn't necessarily otherwise have. Like maybe there's a story that lures in somebody who is into detective games. Like the first episode is going to be a detective episode, but the second episode is going to be like a romantic story, like a rom-com told through the eyes of a 21-year-old girl, which is completely different. It has no detective tonalities in it, but I kind of find it interesting to have the first person who's into these detective games like the series and going to the second game and have like a completely different experience. Maybe like an experience they have never had through gameplay ever in their life. Like challenge the kind of the what games are meant to be. Like games are usually made by boys or men and they kind of have these manly stories in the point and click adventure game series. Like I don't remember, like in the when I grew up, like everything made by LucasArts was always from the point of view of usually from the point of view of a man, and kind of these, like these, They were fun games, of course, I'm not saying, but I kind of feel that there's so many different stories that could be told. Like, what would be an adventure game where you are maybe you're mentally ill,
mm-hmm.
and the world you experience is way different? Like, how would you make a game where your challenge is just to get through the door out in the morning? What would be the puzzles for a person whose challenges are way different than everybody else? It's like, make really kind of these weird point of views, which is kind of ironic that the first episode is just like your run-of-the-mill basic
right,
and makes an adventure game.
Well, start with what you know, right?
You ramp up. You mentioned puzzles, though. Yeah. So explain, you're talking about from this is a regular person's point of view perspective puzzles, then are we to expect different types of puzzles as the series progresses? Tell us a little bit about the gameplay.
Yeah, I think so. At the moment, in the first episode, I really liked the gameplay in the it was just released like a year or two, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, this kind of side-scrolling adventure game, like a Bone something. Can't remember. You were Bone like Totem? This you were like this weasel in it.
Backbone,
yeah.
Yeah. I think you're a raccoon.
Yeah. I really like the prologue episode that was just like this short story, but I think it was really well made where it felt challenging, but there was no inventory. There was, you just got an item and then you went to something and you could, that item could interact with, you could, it would automatically use it. Mine is not that straightforward, but I kind of realized that you can make an adventure game where the puzzles are not too challenging, where it's kind of, it was still really fun to play the game and to see the story and see kind of to immerse yourself in the world, but it was a bit easier. So I'm not going to make this as easy, but I'm going to make some puzzles in this game that are relatively easy. So there isn't that much pixel hunting or stuff like that. But it's really hard to tell, honestly.
The story will be the primary aspect of the game then, correct?
Yeah, and the world, just immersing yourself in this weird world and kind of living this life of these people who are kind of in this situation. I think that's kind of the, I hope that the world turns out interesting as I think it could be, like where you learn all these new things all the time, because you don't know everything that I just said off the bat. You just wake up in your home and you start living your life, and then through these examine texts and your interactions with people, you kind of learn little by little that this is very limited what you can do in this world. Like, then you kind of have to navigate and figure out the rules and kind of learn about everything. So I think the first episode is mostly going to be also about just learning the backstory of the world, like what's going on with it and why everything is like it is.
Maybe like at all more specific about what the story of the first episode is, like who do you play, what you mentioned, a mystery,
investigating? The first episode is revolves around this topic of this, there is this AI kind of thought experiment of this called paperclip paradox, where you have an AI that's meant to make paperclips, and it needs to make paperclips, and it gets rewarded when it makes paperclips, more paperclips. And then it eventually ends up making the whole solar system into paperclips. Like, it just figures out ways to make the world into paperclips, and the moon and the stars and everything into paperclips. It's not the paperclip paradox, but I wanted to explore a similar topic where you have an AI that's doing something that's ultimately like meant either mundane or good natured, but it turns like on its head and it's really dangerous. So the first episode is about this AI, I don't know, what would it be like, this kind of just figuring out the water usage. Like, maybe it's like the central water plant AI, and it's predicting into the future. It needs to balance the water so that you have water in the future. There's global warming and it's kind of dry everywhere. So it's projecting, and it figures out that in 100 years or 200 years, there's going to be a massive drought, and in order to survive that drought, like there's no water everywhere, it's going to be dry as a bone, it needs to gather water reserves to carry through that time. And it figures, okay, I'm going to save water for like 2 years, and that should be enough. Let's just pipe every water, like all the water into these tanks, underwater tanks, for 2 years that they built, and then that should be good to go. And then the game begins one morning. You're this older dude who's been the janitor of this apartment complex. But of course, you're not the janitor anymore, because that's a job that some computer is doing. And then you wake up to a knock on your door, and it's your neighbor and his wife. And the wife is just like covered in shampoo, coming in like, hey, the water is out. The water main is out. Like, what should we do? Like, can you help us? Because that's like the janitor, of course, knows the water system. And then you kind of go like, I can't help. And then you check around your own house, and you see that everything, like your water is out too. Like there's nothing coming from your faucets or anything. So then you figure out it must be like a larger issue, like it's a building-wide issue. And then you have to go to the city hall to meet the maintenance, like the administrative AI setup that can answer you. And then you can file a complaint, there's no water, and hopefully get it running. But as you go to the city hall, you learn that all the water has been cut out from everybody for 2 years, so that in the future, people will survive this drought. And then the game begins. The game kind of begins from there, where you kind of have to figure out how you can override the system or get the water back into circulation.
Without actually appearing to do any work.
Yeah. Just like not
that's
doing
any
work.
That's not right. You know, I wouldn't mind actually living in a world where we can't do any work. But then, you know, comes the inevitable, all the downsides. You know, I don't want to live in a world where ice cream has to be staying on the floor. That's
You kind of just have to live like a pig. And of course, in this world, there is also this rich neighborhood, because the AI is training data has people like segregated into the rich and the poor, and the middle class, and then there's the poor and the rich. And this setup is being artificially maintained. Even though money doesn't matter anymore, there's still people who are really rich, and they're like the AI is handling them like rich people who are just living in their mansions and kind of have everything. And then there's these poor people who have no housing. And then there's the middle class, the working class, who of course can't do any work. And this construct is being like artificially maintained by the AI, because that's just the way people have been doing their life.
The story
go ahead.
I was just going to say, the story that you've penned is absolutely fascinating, obviously inspired by your love of artificial intelligence. Is this something you're just truly fascinated about? I mean, because you're jumping right in here.
I think so. I think because in the beginning, I'm a graphic designer working in games, so I'm directly challenged by AI. Like, it's directly a threat to me in the future. So I think I kind of wanted to kind of tame it, or kind of figure out a way how to survive it, so that I wouldn't be obsolete after. Like, if this goes the worst way it could go, like, I kind of want to understand AI and understand what it's about. I purposefully don't want to take part in the ethics of it, like the current AI tools, what the ethics are. Like, I don't, of course I care about it, but I don't want to think about that, because that's an issue that will be resolved at some point. Like, there's going to be a lawsuit that's going to be either won or lost by the AI companies, and based on that outcome, the tools will be made ethical, or they will continue to be as they are. And regardless of the outcome in the future, in 2-3 years, AI tools will be used regardless. Like, they will be used everywhere, because
historically, we've always been stopped. People, we can't do this. That's unethical. And that's what we know now. We never look back and say, this was campaigned against in 1989. There's always steps when it comes to learning and using what we've learned.
The systems might not be the same. The companies might not be the same that we have now in the future, but overall, the workflow, when you use it in your life, it's going to be exactly the same. So I kind of just want to pretend to live in that future where AI already is a thing, and see what it is like. And it's not all happy times. There is stuff that I can't do because I use AI stuff. There are things that I just can't get from the AI. Like I said in the beginning, you can't get the same character ever again. You can only get it once. Mm-hmm. You can't get the same location or the same item. It's very hard to edit stuff or direct stuff specifically. Like when you go online and you see all these nice AI creations, mm-hmm. they are like snowflakes. They are happy accidents. Like most of them are just random stuff that just popped up and people are like, whoa, that's kind of nice. And then you post it online and somebody looks at it and feels really threatened. Like, I could never draw that thing. Mm-hmm. I could never do anything like that. But neither could AI. Like AI could do it at that one point, but never again. Like something was made, it's never going to be made again. Like you can write the same text. You can put in the same seed. You can make everything the same. You can use the same computer. You can wait a year to be on the same day, on the same second, and it's going to be different. It's never going to be the same. Like if you need to have a consistency, you need to have a human being doing the work. So there's limitations there's a lot of limitations to puzzle work that I have to kind of navigate around. Like I had this puzzle where I wanted to have a photo booth, this good old photo booth where you go into the booth and you get this strip of photographs from the door. AI couldn't do it. I couldn't make it with AI. There was no way it would give me the photo booth. I had to figure out a new puzzle around it. And then a year later, not a year, but like a half a year later, I tried it again. And now with the updates in AI technology, it could actually make a photo booth for me. So now I had to kind of generate bits of it and kind of combine them together. So it's like a collage made of AI generated images now. But I could make the photo booth because it's for a puzzle that I kind of like, that I want to have this photo booth in it. But it took me a long time to be able to make the photo booth. Mm-hmm. And for a longest time, it felt to me that it's not possible. So AI does limit things. You kind of have to be accepting to the randomness of it, and I think of an outline, like maybe it'll go like this, and then I get these locations and I see it's like my idea doesn't work, but then I have to get inspired by what AI made and then figure out what kind of a puzzle or what kind of a story I could tell in this location instead.
So you've got to be flexible.
I have to, like, I can't be too rigid, and I cannot see this level of flexibility in a AAA studio or even an indie studio. Like, it's hard to imagine.
Yeah.
Like, if you need to be precise, if you need to be specific, if you need to have a complete control, AI is not going to be helpful. And that's the main thing that makes me not so afraid of it. Like, I don't think it's going to be, it's going to allow for people to make some things that have never been done before. But if people want to continue doing the products that they have been doing until now, it's not going to cut it.
Yeah, I had no idea that sort of AI even now had that kind of limitation. So that's fascinating. Definitely. But like, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds here, but like, I'm curious about how you train AI tools to do what you want to do, and then sort of how the tools actually go about doing them. Like, again, just in layman's terms, or even below that, and you know,
I can't even use ChatGPT
for people like me. Yeah,
I've dabbled in teaching these custom models, where you kind of train the AI from images that you have, like a batch of images. But I haven't done it enough that I kind of understand the technicality of it. I kind of know that you can kind of use these images to make a bias on the AI. Like, you, if you have a training data set where you have 7 black persons and 20 white persons, and you ask for a person, it's going to make a white person because it thinks that's what a person is. So you can kind of put in these images that have more weight, I guess. So it will drive the bias of the system towards these images. So it's just like you kind of add like a vector to it. Like when you make stuff with AI, it's you're writing a coordinate. When you write a text, it's transferred into a coordinate, and this coordinate is then taken from this latent space where it's all the possibilities exist, like this kind of a quantum realm where you can just go into and pick something up and bring it out. and you get these coordinates from the text. You write banana, and then it goes into the coordinate of banana, and it takes a banana. And if you say half a dog, half a banana, it goes middle of a dog and a banana in the coordinate and picks that up. And with this training, what happens is that it kind of skews the answer so that when you go towards a banana, it kind of just goes to another direction based on the vector that the training data gave you. Like, is it not making any sense? But it's a weird setup anyway. Like, oh, everything right. AI is just so weird.
Learning as you go. So yeah. you are a game developer, but that's how you make your living. And this is an experiment, something that you're playing around with, you're trying to get on top of. And the game is, from what I understand, or the series of games is set to be released as free, correct?
Yeah.
So with that in mind, what do you say to those who are not necessarily against your game, but against artificial intelligence coming into, gosh, every industry as of now?
I don't know. It's I think with every technology, like if you go back to newspaper articles on people who talked about the internet or the phone or whatever, there's always these people who just say like, that's a fad, it's not going to take, or are against it. And reading those messages later on, seems like those guys were so out of touch. I think the little bit of the same is going to happen. Like once we're living in this world with AI, where it's where we're living with it, I think the people who have been rigorously against it, they have helped, of course, to make sure that we go into a better direction with it, where we are more in control and we think about it more, how we use it. I don't mean games, but I mean like other ways where it can directly be harmful for people if we have this cold machine doing decisions for whoever, who knows what. But I don't think like entertainment is the industry with AI we should be concerned about. But it will destroy jobs for sure. Like there will be rotoscope artists won't have jobs. Like there will be these professions that kind of lose their. I had to turn back on the light. Just a second. There will be these sets of professions that will lose their livelihood. But as with every disruptive technology like internet and the car and whatever we have, the end result has been that there has always been more jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Like the life will be, the world as we know it will change, I think, with AI completely. Like it's going to be way different. It's going to be a painful transition for some, but overall, for everybody, I believe it's going to make everything a bit better. But I'm not to me professionally AI doesn't matter that much. Like I've been doing fine without it for 25 years. Like if everything just went back to what it was, I would be just fine. I know I wouldn't be able to finish this game because I tried it so many times, but I would be just as happy as ever. Like I don't need it in my professional life, but I believe it's gonna come no matter what I want or whatever, or what I feel about it. It's going to happen no matter what. And I'm kind of in a mindset that I just have to prepare for it so that I can make the best of it.
Ride with it or collide with it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you're using AI for graphics and for voiceover, but like the one thing that you won't let it do is the writing and the design and that kind of thing. Obviously, that's a passion of yours anyway, but did you even toy with the idea of AI design a game?
And yeah, and I did use it just yesterday for, I had this puzzle where you kind of need to interact with electric wires. And so I just wrote the outline of the puzzle for ChatGPT 3.5, and I asked like, what possible solutions would you have for this puzzle, like what item could you use on these wires? And then it gave me five very obvious ones, and then I asked for more and more. Like I had like 50 different things you could use to interact with those wires. I didn't end up using any of those items for the solution, but it was so nice to kind of get these options.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gets your brain going, and sometimes it does hit a good answer. Like there's a couple of locations that I haven't been quite sure what would be a good location. And then I just asked AI, like, what location would be a good hideout for like a massive water facility? And then it comes up with a list of five. It's not amazing. It's just like the basic stuff.
Right.
Like it can say like school or hospital or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then one of those is like, yeah, maybe that would be the best solution. And then I go with it.
Right.
So I kind of use it to visualize options. So it kind of helps my imagination get going.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't take it as a given and just use it blindly. I kind of try to kind of just bounce things off of it. And then the world will also be full of AI characters who are like robots and coffee machines, and everything in this world that's mechanical now is in the future is talking and has mm-hmm. a voice chip. So if you want to use your faucet, you have to talk to it instead. You don't turn it on or off. You can just ask it, can you give me water? And then those Internet of Things, I did the text for those, so that I wrote the dialogue first. And then I went to ChatGPT and tried to ask it directly, or then try to kind of play it to give me the same lines of text, but spoken by ChatGPT, so that I could have the tonality of this AI machine. Mm-hmm. And then I would copy and paste those lines in the game.
Right.
Because I wanted them to feel like that you're talking to an AI. So I figured mm-hmm. like maybe if I just get those same lines out of the AI written in its own words, it would be the best.
Right.
And Jack, you had some really astute questions and observations before we got started. And I think from the flow of the conversation, I think it's like maybe you should ask some of those questions from your point of view and get those.
You said you didn't really want to get into the ethical aspect of this, but that is sort of behind a lot of the backlash that I've heard so far, that like basically AI is sourcing from other artists without their consent. Like you yourself have called it a collaboration. Like you understand this isn't just you. It's sort of every artist the AI is drawing from. So like, how do you kind of square that? Like, you know, you are kind of borrowing, for lack of a better word, artists.
It's, I know that the, how I understand it, I think legally it's going to be determined that it's fine. Like, I think there's not going to be a copyright issue because of like other similar cases in the past where works have been directly copied without even like AI is not copying anything. There's no pixels going from this image to the end result. It's just, there's like a hard cut between training data and the final result. There's nothing moving between, like these systems are isolated from each other, the training and the generation. But it still feels, or it can feel, that it's not okay. And I think the fact that it feels wrong means that there's something wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that people are worried about it and feel wronged by those companies, I think those feelings are real. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that everybody is delusional and that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. Because people feel it, for them it's real, and then mm-hmm. it's real. But is it something that is an actual concern, or is it fine? Like thinking about the limitations of AI for actual work, like I don't know ultimately I don't know if it's going to be an issue. Like I don't know if everybody has used AI, and it seems to me that the limitations of AI were a bit of a surprise for you too. It's not as all powerful as people think it is. It's a lot more limited. Mm-hmm. Of course, it can mm-hmm. do stuff. It can mm-hmm. do many things and real fast. But it's really difficult to write it and kind of get it to do what you want. And just talking about like think like what I like when whenever somebody does anything, they go to Google and they search for reference images. And in many cases where AI will end up being used in the future is a reference image generator. Like if you want to be inspired, you want to make a spaceship, you want to make a cool spaceship, you go to Midjourney and you type in cool spaceship and it gives you cool spaceships. It doesn't give you spaceships that you can find online anywhere, but it gives you the essence of a cool spaceship. And then it's a for you, it's a reference. And then you would use it as a, like a reference from Google, but with like a broader search where the malleable search results between like make this spaceship like if the aliens Nostradamus ship existed in Star Wars universe. And you can't find that on Google, but you can find it on Midjourney. And then you can be inspired. Like, is that style you want to go to? Like usually you would be looking at these two ships, like you would look at Star Destroyers and the Nostradamus and kind of try to figure it out. But with AI, you can get the result immediately. Like as a reference tool, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I don't see, I can't see it being bad as a reference tool, where you can kind of get inspired and draw inspiration from everybody just the way you did before, but with a much more control over the result, what you want. Like in this case, ironically, AI has more control than Google has for image search.
Right.
So you
for final images, if you want to have like I'm going to make a movie with the Nostradamus spaceship and then you try ask AI, make me this ship. You can't use that ship in your movie. It doesn't work. It's going to be from the wrong angle, lit the wrong way. And you can have just this one angle of it just flying like this. If you want to see it from the front direction, it's not happening. You have to do it yourself like the old-fashioned way. So it's even though it's using people's work as reference, like there are not so many cases where you can use it as a final output. Of course, in the print industry, it's a bit different. Like in the advertisement industry, it's a bit different. And it's learning all the time and getting better. But it's so limited that you really can't. Like you always end up in a place where you have to get somebody real to work on it. Yeah. Like this, it's kind of funny to me that when you go to these forums where you have AI artists posting their images, and then there are questions like, how can I make this happen? Like, how can I do this? Sometimes those things are so simple to do without AI. Like somebody wanted to have like a hand like this, that's wireframe hand, like a 3D wireframe, really simple, like 90s style or 80s kind of 3D graphics wireframes. And he was like, I want to make a hand like this. I can't make it. And that's like 15 minutes on a 3D software and you can make it. Right. But it's fun to me to see these people who have all these kind of power of AI, but they can't do these simple tasks that would be trivial for any artist to do. And that's kind of showing to me the truth behind AI, where it cannot do even the simplest task that you want it to. Like if you want to have that control, it doesn't give it to you. Like it, at this point in time, you can't do it. Like that to me makes me less scared of what the future with AI is going to be. And I see it more like this reference thing. And as I said, with this, my game project, I have to compromise all the time. Like I cannot do everything I want because AI won't do it for me. Well, so I'm kind of just constantly kind of giving away my control in favor of being able to produce these things fast enough.
And you've mentioned the exponential leaps that it's taken over the course of the last year. You've also mentioned the future, how you're not as nervous about what it's going to be. But where do you see artificial intelligence in the gaming development industry over the next, say, 2 or 3 years?
I think it's going to become a tool that programmers use daily. I think programmers are going to become more of like a pair programmers, where the pair is actually ChatGPT, where the output is a lot more. It's much, much more. Like programming at the moment, in my experience, is a big bottleneck in game companies. Like games need to be scoped down and made smaller and more simple because there's just not enough programmers to make all the functions that we want to have in the games. In the future, the output of one programmer can be multiplied, and it's not going to be so that I don't believe that people are going to get fired. Like, I'm going to just fire these programmers because ChatGPT does it. Mm-hmm. You're just going to have the same amount of programmers, but you're going to make a bigger game. Like, the game is going to scale up.
Mm-hmm.
The it's not going to be that you scale down the team, but you scale up the product.
Or the speed.
And once you scale up the product, you make more money from it because it's a bigger, better game. So it's a lot more, it's a lot more likely for you to get more out of it, get more sales, get like a better review scores, whatever you get from it. Like, you can make a better product with the same team that you had before. So I don't see it as like a threat like that. And with concept artists, it's going to be helping concept artists make a lot more concepts. Like, there's many, many teams who need concept art, and there's one poor guy just trying to do everything, or two. But in the future, those guys can just make stuff so fast. They can just use this AI to get the reference and then do kit bashing over paint, or like kind of get going from that. And with project management, I think AI will be more reliable in figuring out how things happen when you have a company and you start logging work, like how long it took anybody to do stuff, and you kind of log work for maybe a month or two. I'm sure there's going to be an AI system that can then really reliably say what the scope of a milestone should be, like how much work can this company or this team do. And I think it's going to be a lot more reliable than human artists or designers are, or producers, when they figure out how long it takes to work on something, because it can see these nuances that people are always missing. And I think with everything, I kind of think it's just going to make stuff more efficient to do. Like, the vision that I have for what AI will do, as I said earlier, is that it will scale up the projects. Like, if you have a budget in a company of like 10 million for a game, today that 10 million goes to people, it goes to payroll. It doesn't go to software or computers or whatever it is. It goes to payroll directly. And then you make a game that's worth, that's like a 10 million budget game. You make a game that's 10 million. But then if you have AI-powered people in there working on the game, you can still use the same 10 million on these people, but they can make a game that's worth 20 million.
Mm.
So you can scale up the product considerably. And on every levels, they're going to be like a massive embiggening of the end product. And then I'm really excited to see what's going to happen with the big AAA studios that make like 100 million games or 200 or 400 million games, when they get to make on their regular $1 billion games that only cost half of it. Like, what's the future for these games going to be like? What will AAA products look like in the future when they are scaled up so massively?
Never That's mind really the games too. Now think about the consoles that we're gonna have to run these things. Now we're getting exciting here.
Yeah. I think rendering is gonna happen on the AI completely in the future. Like, somebody's gonna crack there's gonna be these style transfers where you do like a basic 3D render and then you do a style transfer on it. And then you can do like a watercolor or crime movie or whatever style you wanna go with, and then the game just looks exactly like it. I think that's really interesting to me.
Well, Jack, do you have any other questions on the topic?
No, I like UC's optimism. He's talked me down from the ledge a little bit. I mean, I'm not a doomsdayer regarding AI, but
to be honest, there's going to be people who are going to be hurt by it. There's no going around it.
Right.
There's going to be professionals who are going to be like completely gone.
We're hurt by it.
I don't know,
because we refuse to use AI in our and writing our articles.
I don't think your jobs are going to be in jeopardy, but I think like BuzzFeed and all these companies that can just like do like these news recycling, I think those people are going to go out of a job real fast. Like, next year, maybe there's going to be companies that's just like, there's a web crawling robot that just writes these stories with AI.
Mm-hmm.
There's no people going to be needed for it. But I would argue that for a writer, that's not really fulfilling work anyway. Mm. Just Google for interesting stuff and repost it. And like Paris Hilton's new dog or whatever it is.
Right.
Just post that stuff, like echo chamber it out. Mm. I think those jobs are going to be gone. And like with every disruption, like when internet came, it got rid of many jobs, but it produced so many more. And when cars came out, like there, you can't see when you go on the road anymore. You don't see these horse stables where you can feed your horse and get some mead on the way to the next castle. Like those places are gone. Like the stable managers are just out of a job. But there's many more gas stations and whatever you have now that are kind of replace those. But there's going to be professions that are going to go. I don't know which ones they are. I hope these people get through it as like with minimum damage as possible.
My hopes is that it gets to a point to where it's differentiates itself pretty quickly. And I mean that in because I'm noticing like, in what I do, you know, I read some articles and I'm like, ooh, that doesn't seem like what our staff would write. You know, it seems like kind of the same type of thing. And I'm seeing it in like YouTube videos, like, gosh, yeah, that's a script that was written by ChatGPT. And they're all just the same. I want to get it to a point to where, hey, yeah, we could use these, but let's differentiate a little bit. Let's not all punch out the same stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
The same medium.
AI is a machine that's makes everything, just melds everything together and makes like a medium of it, mm-hmm. where it's just this like common denominator machine where it just like takes everything and just melds it into this kind of medium goop, which is what it does. And then that's what happens. Like it will make everything seem a little bit the same, and mm-hmm. It doesn't know about the future or know about the current stuff. It knows about the past, mm-hmm. what it reads online, what it has in its training data. So you can't get really current stuff with it. And again, I think it's really fun for figuring out connections. Like it's really good for figuring out how things are connected to each other. Like if you want to have if you want to know what medieval profession would be most like the common cold, like what analog would be, it would come up with an analog that's really specific and really good. Mm-hmm. So it's really good for figuring out connections that people have a hard time with, because it knows everything. Like there might be a person who knows about flu symptoms, but they might not know about medieval professions, and they might not be able to draw the connections between these two. But ChatGPT knows this both, and it can figure mm-hmm. out the connections. So it's a really good research tool for figuring out how things are connected.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, let's have a little fun, guys.
I'm ready.
As everyone knows, we end each episode with a top five. And I'll tell you guys up front, this week I did not send the show notes to Yossi in advance. So Jack and I had prior notice that our topic was going to be the top five games that start with A, and Yossi is literally on the fly. So this is going to be easier for us, but I'm eager to see what Yossi pumps out here. And you're the guest, yeah. So you get to go first. We're going to go around in a circle here. So you choose one, and then Jack, and then myself, and back to you. Okay. Let's hear it.
So the first one that I picked, games that begin with A, mm-hmm. that was a tough one. I got to Google a little bit, and I found this gem that I really loved when I was a kid growing up. It was a game called A-10 Cuba, where it's a flight simulator where you fly with this A-10 Warthog.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It was like this stubby nose aircraft, and that was so fun. I think it was just the aircraft was so cool. The game was so hard to play. I was just always crashing into tanks and whatever. But the airplane was just so cool. I could never get past the first level. But that's something that kind of... It made an impact on me. I think it kind of... When I think of airplanes, I always think of the Warthog as a design. Whenever I do whatever I have to design, spacecraft or whatever. I think that's ingrained in me, that little airplane.
All right.
Yeah, great choice. Okay, I'm going to stick with adventure games adventure-ish. It's probably some people would argue that the first one I'm going to pick isn't an adventure game, but I do. The Amnesia series, particularly the Dark Descent, Josh was going, oh, yeah. You took my, but, yeah, you were bandying about names before the show. And I'm going,
I didn't want to tell you the only one that I knew.
Okay, so we were both sitting on it. But anyway, yeah, just some of the best horror games ever created. And, you know, the Dark Descent is, you know, certainly top five of the scariest games of all time in my book. So, yeah, great, great series.
Oh, yeah, that was going to be my first because I knew Jack would have that on there. I was kind of baiting
I'll go him. With the first game. You can take one of the others. It's got sequels.
Okay. Well, no, I'm going to go with A Link to the Past. So I know it's not The Legend of Zelda, but The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. One of the greatest games of all time. And one that truly turned me into just a casual gamer. You know, I went from NES kid, Mario Brothers fun, Mario Brothers 2 really good, and then the SNES came out and it just started getting better and better, and A Link to the Past just completely turned me into a gamer.
I'm on record as saying that's the best game of all time, so I certainly can't argue with that.
Oh wow.
My favorite, maybe not the best. That might be, you know, an objective.
I've got it number seven. So okay. Okay, great. Yossi.
The next one, I would argue this is a bit of an adventure game, Abe's Odyssey.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Which is maybe a puzzle platformer, but it also has adventuring in it, like a fair bit. That was something that I really liked on the PlayStation. Like it had amazing, like the most amazing feature was where it went from a cutscene seamlessly to gameplay, which I don't think I had ever seen before, where it was pre-rendered, and then it kind of just the camera just would stop, and you would be able to move the character, and you couldn't see the scene. Or maybe you could, like these days, if you look at it, of course, from the JPEG artifacts in the video, you could see where it cuts, but then it was seamless, and it was like amazing.
It looks like a great series. I own most, if not all, of the games, and I've never played one. And it's always a series I wanted to get into because it totally looks like my kind of game. So, I don't know if I should pick mine now. Okay, I'll leave a gimme because I took one already, and I'll go with Abzu from Giant Squid, which is an underwater game. Not very adventure-y, but oh, it's just such a gorgeous game. There's some light puzzling, but it's mostly just about exploring all these underwater ecosystems and stuff. It's so gorgeous. The music is amazing. So if you haven't played it, I definitely encourage you to.
Okay. And I'm going to try to stick to the adventure theme here. And I'm going to go with, I love history. I'm going to go with A Plague Tale. Have any of you guys played A Plague Tale?
Yep. I played the first one.
Okay. Yeah, me too. I think I started the second one. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I didn't. Maybe. Yeah, I just finished it. It was a really good reference for the game I'm working on at Mainframe, PAX Day, because it's kind of a similar era.
Okay. What else you got, Yossi?
I'm going to jump to Alan Wake, because I want to take it before you take it. which I put in. I've actually never played it myself, which is a bit of a, I should have. I worked at Remedy myself as a VFX artist on Quantum Break just after Alan Wake. So, and currently on the daily, I worked with people who worked on Alan Wake, and they regularly bring it up in conversations at work. So it's like a callback game.
Yeah. No, that's really neat. I've played Alan Wake. They're really enjoyable. To me, it would have worked better as a first-person game, or maybe I just sucked at it. But yeah, they're really good. I didn't realize you worked on Quantum Break, too. I played that not that long ago, actually. So good. Ooh, whatever you did, good job.
Yeah. I did a bunch of the explosions and the gunshots.
And
when those time whatever things kind of streak and the enemies and they leave these kind of lightnings behind them.
Okay. All right. Neat. All right. For my next one, I got to go with at least one Agatha Christie game. I can either do it Agatha Christie or the actual game name of And Then There Were None, which I still consider to be her best novel ever. It's just such an amazing story. The game itself wasn't that great, but come on, Agatha Christie and Then There Were None. How do you not include that in a top A list? you're on mute there, my friend.
I am muted. So I am muted. Interesting. Okay, so between everything that we had gone out, I was like, man, my games are boring. I have not played a lot. I could not think of any. So you know what I did? AI. I just right now, I tech. That's why I was muted. I didn't want anybody to hear my keyboard. I consulted ChatGPT about the best video games that start with A. And it reminded me, thank goodness, of Age of Empires.
Oh, amazing.
Did you forget PC about it love. Or was that on your list?
No, I'm only doing adventure games. Gotcha. But
yes, okay. Age of Empires, again, one of those games that I've lost. Well, one and two. I lost so many hours to Warcraft, Command and Conquer, StarCraft. I mean, I lost so much time to those games. Yeah. Loved it.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
You're up, you'll see.
It's me.
You'll see.
Yeah. I run out of games with start with A, and then I took the obvious, which is Assassin's Creed. Mm. And because it's a franchise, it's gonna take up two places. whatever installations you want to put in those, maybe.
Well, do you have a favorite of that series? Do you have a favorite?
I really like the one with Notre Dame. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, it's hard to remember.
Where you're in Paris. That was amazing. Can't remember which one. One of those, and then any other one.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing series. I followed it. Like, I played every game up to, I think, the fourth or fifth one. And then I just, they got kind of samey. So I set them aside. And now there's been like eight more on the
list. Yeah, it's just like, every year there's one. Like, it's like FIFA, NHL. Like, every year you get one.
But they're amazing games. Amazing games.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go with the precursor to the Siberia series, which is Amerzone. Okay. By, what would then go on to become Whitebirds and Microids and... it was sort of created by Benoit Sokol, but a very different game. It's first person, kind of the node-based, click to lurch ahead kind of thing. So not my favorite style of game, but still that very distinctive SoCal design aesthetic, right? So something AI could never come up with.
By precursor, you just meant like it helped step his way up to, or was there any similarities? Because I never played that game.
You know what? I was trying to remember that when I was doing the list. It's like, is there a link? I don't think there is, or is the loosest of links if there is. Yeah, I think it's just kind of standalone.
Okay. I have not played any of the other games that came up on ChatGPT. So let's go with American Mickey's Alice. That was a fun one.
Great game.
And when that came out, gosh, what was it, like 99 or 2000 or something? I remember I was just
don't tell me that.
Well, yeah, I wasn't married yet, but that was one of the, I was playing mostly adventure games, and then this came out and I'm like, I'm not gonna like it. I didn't want to like it, and by God, I liked it. it was super, super good and different.
It was, yeah,
different for the time.
I actually just remembered a game
that
starts with an A. Mm-hmm. It's almost an adventure game, and I really like it. It's going to jump to the first place in the list. Another World.
Oh, yes.
Belfin Software.
Yep.
That's an amazing game. So beautiful, like this vector graphics. Like full screen animations back in the time was just
next level
stuff. And it was so nice where you're playing this kind of scientist that gets sucked into another dimension or something with like aliens and big lion dogs and whatever you have. Like that was like it was like artistically and technically just way above what these side scrolling games used to be. Mm-hmm. Like it was a very serious and very well produced game.
One of the best cover arts of any game that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I just love it. Love it. Nice.
All right, this is the last one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, I left you guys a gimme, but neither of you, and you mentioned it before the show, but so I'm going to go with the Ace Attorney series. Now, if there's any stickler out there going, hey, that's really called Phoenix Wright, you're right, it is. But
I took a link to the past, so
we could do Apollo Justice. That was sort of a spinoff game in that series, or there was Ace Attorney Investigations, Miles Edgeworth. So I'm still in with the A's. So anyway, it's just a really quirky, fun, desperately in need of better editing adventure game series.
Okay. What about Animal Crossing?
Oh, yeah.
Animal Crossing.
Never played it, but.
I had to think about, am I going to be too embarrassed to say Animal Crossing? No, because if you have your friends over, you want to have a good time. Animal Crossing was one of the best games at that time, especially, you know, when, gosh, the Super, or not, what was it, GameCube era. That's when I was playing it, back when it really, really first started coming out. So much fun to get everybody together, and you don't have to just sit there and have the same old conversations over and over again. You're just sitting on the couch and just having a good time. Animal Crossing. And that's it. That's our top five games that end in A. That is our fun hanging out time with UC. Man, this is a great time. Super excited about the game. Cannot wait. When do you think we're going to see the first episode?
I'd like to have it out in a year. Mm-hmm. I'm just in a place where technically the game is there. Like, I know the UI, I know the puzzle mechanics, I know how, like, I have the building blocks, and now I just have to kind of just do it. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that it'll be in about a year. I'm hoping that it's going to be sooner, but then I'm kind of saying that to myself, like, year is the deadline. And if I just do the story so that if I do the ending next, now I have the beginning, and then I do the ending, and then I just start chopping in the middle, and then after a year is gone, I just release the thing, then it just can't fail.
That was like a plan.
Oh, I like where your head's at there. And if anybody really wants to follow the project, he does a blog, a very, very interesting blog. Tell us where we can find that.
It's echoesofsomewhere.com. Mm-hmm. And it's there's a bunch of AI stuff in it, but there's also a bunch of non-AI stuff in it. Mm-hmm. I just document everything and then I post it, boring or not. So it's like a bit of a risky enterprise there, when sometimes you just talk about just UI code or just some like UI audio bits mm-hmm. and bobs and stuff like that. But I just wanted to document the whole thing, so that, because for me it's a research project on what it means to work with AI as in a real game product production. I can then let everybody else know what it feels like when they read to the blog, and they can kind of get an idea of the challenges that I faced or the wins that I got from using AI. So I thought it would be made the most sense to kind of document everything very detailedly.
And we know that people are interested in it because, as I referenced earlier, we've been getting to know Yusi for a while. Now we've released an article that chronicled his game and some other people's thoughts on the game. Was very, very interesting. It was actually something that was a lot of people were quite interested in. So where else can we find you?
On Twitter. I think my handle is Jussi Kemppainen. Mm-hmm. And then the same goes to YouTube. But my YouTube channel is, it has some old works that I made, like music videos and such, but then it's mostly just, I use it as a video kind of sharing stuff for my blog. So it has like dozens of videos about Echoes of Somewhere, just little like things where mouse moves on the UI and little things like that. But that's the one place where you can kind of find that stuff. And then as a career, I'm working on this game called Pax Day, mm-hmm. which is now in closed alpha, I think. And we are going to be going to public alpha or beta or whatever that is at some point in the future. So that's a game where you can kind of, that you can play sooner than Echoes of Somewhere. And it's a big, big project with people from Remedy and CCP working on this massively multiplayer online sandbox set in the Middle Ages.
And I will have all of those links in the description. You can find us and everywhere where you can consume your podcasts. You can find us in all the socials, adventuregamehotspot.com. Jack is just churning this stuff out. I mean, every single
not
day.
Not myself.
Yeah. Pretty soon we're going to announce who were the nominees for the Adventure Game Hall of Fame. Be on the lookout. That's coming pretty soon. Jack, anything else that we should maybe tease on the way out?
Oh, I don't know. We teased the site redesign too, right? I just got a few new screens just before the show. So you haven't even seen them. So I'll be sending those to you. So, but yeah, I can't share those yet. But we've got people working hard behind the scenes to make the site even prettier than you can imagine.
Very good. For Yossi, for Jack, I am Joshua. This is Adventure Game Hotspot Podcast, and we will see you guys next time. So take care, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.